Meeting for April's holiday meeting order. Roll call, please.
City of Flights, City of Cathedral City,
Present.
City of Coachella, Desert Healthcare District,
Here.
City of Desert Hot Springs, City of Indian Wells, City of Indio, City of Boquinta,
Present.
City of Palm Desert,
Here.
City of Palm Springs, City of Rancho Mirage,
Here.
Riverside County,
Here.
Torres Martinez, Desert Kaliah Indians. Chair, we do not yet have.
Okay, thank you. Please join me in the pledge of allegiance. Ready? Yeah.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Chair, for the audio record, I would like to welcome Torres Martinez, Desert Kaliah Indian. I'd like to welcome the City of Desert Hot Springs and also the City of Indian Wells.
Oh,
No, sir. All right.
okay.
Keep running away.
There was a little tension. All right. Welcome, everyone. Sorry I'm late. So, do we have any public comments?
We do not.
Okay. All right. Chair, committee, CBIC staff announcements. I do have one thing real quick. Just Torres Martinez recently in March, we began construction on a 16-unit tiny home village for our homeless population at the reservation. So if anybody wants any additional information, all we did was convert some tough sheds into tiny homes, and we have an open area. So if any CVAG members want to come out, look, or maybe want to know how we did it or budget or anything, just reach out. I'm an open book. I'll send you whatever information you guys want. We plan on having our first residents in there July, and then we're going to do wraparound services because it's just a stopping ground so that we can get them into permanent housing. So just throwing that out there.
I'm sure to follow up on Gessie and our friends at the county might as well.
Oh, yeah. Sounds good. All right, consent calendar.
Motion to approve.
Second. All right, La Quinta makes a motion to approve. Seconded by Cathedral City. All in favor?
Right.
Opposed? Abstaining? Sounds like everyone's in favor. Items held over from the consent calendar. So we have discussion on federal funding shifts to the continuums of care.
Yes, good morning, everybody. You saw the staff report that pretty much outlined the administration's attempt primarily in their budget. Basically eliminate the continuum of cares, but more importantly to move away from the housing first model and focus more on treatment and sheltering, which as many of you know is not the most effective. Treatment is effective, but the sheltering is not the most effective way to actually get people into permanent housing, as we've demonstrated throughout Riverside County and almost every city here in the Coachella Valley. Additionally, though, I wanted to highlight that obviously did not come to fruition with HR1 going into effect, or not HR1, but with the last budget going into effect for housing and urban development. In November, though, which was really concerning to us as a continuum of care in the county and should be to this committee as well, HUD released their notice of funding opportunity. For the continuum of care funding for the next fiscal year, basically 26, 27 through 28. They do it a 2-year cycle on that and basically have the same tenets that was in the president's proposed budgeting for HUD. So basically eliminating basically continuum of care, changing the formula on how we allocate funding so we wouldn't have been able to renew any of the current projects that we have. We for many, many years, just we allocate dollars to certain providers and then renew those. It gives them a sense of certainty, allows them to continue on the care of services. We would not have been able to do that, and we would have had to change the allocation. We spend about 80% of our HUD funding on permanent supportive housing and efforts to get people into permanent housing. It would have changed that formula down to 30%. And again, primarily focusing on shelter capacity and all that. In early December, there was a suit filed by the National Alliance to End Homelessness, as well as the ACLU and a couple other organizations to block that NOFO. On December 23rd, the court issued an injunction on that, and so it stopped that new NOFO from being released and deferred back to the 23 to 25 NOFO to remain in place. On January 14th, HUD appealed the injunction, and then on April 1st, the court rejected that appeal. So right now, knock on wood, we're in the current status that will basically, when they release the NOFO, which we're expecting within the next 2 to 3 weeks, that it will be the same one that we've operated in the past. We have not heard whether or not HUD is going to appeal to the Supreme Court. We would have thought we would have heard that by now, so we're hoping that that was taken care of that. So as it stands now, we will be able to do the renewal projects like we had and continue the type of funding aspects that we do. If it were, when we first found out about the changes in the NOFO that HUD wanted to do, Tanya and her team at the county basically did a dual track type plan so that if that would have gone into effect, we were already starting to contact and communicate with the providers about the non-renewal so that they understood. And then additionally, how we would start allocating those dollars. And then as well, continued on the same track that we usually do under the current NOFO process. So we still have that in place just in case, so that if there were any changes, the county would be able to pivot relatively quickly. And so that's where we stand now. Happy to take any questions at all. I will make one more comment too, is that the president released his proposed budget just last week, I believe. And it's the same proposals that happened that he proposed in the last budget cycle. Again, if you look at the comments and the proposals out of both the Senate and the House, primarily in the finance committees, they pretty much ignored all those requests and, in fact, increased some funding for HUD and kept basically all the same programs in place. Happy to take any questions.
So, started the conversation by saying there's been a shift in funding from, let's say, housing first to shelter, right? And then what it's unclear to me is, so because of all the interaction, is the funding that you hope to achieve, barring Supreme Court hearings, going to continue with the housing first model?
Yes.
Got it.
We're bound by both HUD regulations now, as well as state regulations, and the funding that we do, that we have to follow that model. That does not mean that we don't allocate resources to shelters. In fact, most of the county general fund allocation, which is only about $2 million a year, a lot of that goes to a sheltering aspect. But it's more the HUD money and then any of the state money. The only state money we're really getting now is the Homeless Housing Assistance Program, or HAP, and that goes to rental assistance.
So how much money are we hoping to achieve?
Our allocation from HUD is about 16 to 17 million a year.
And that's for Riverside County.
Riverside
County. Mm-hmm. And then how are we doing with California funding?
So they just released the HAP round six award. And the county, so the county gets an allocation, and then the continuum of care gets an allocation. And that's roughly about $10 million combined. And then the city of Riverside, since it's one of the big 13, they also get roughly about $10.1 million as well.
The city or the county?
The city.
The city of Riverside.
And how much was that again?
About $10 million.
And then how much of these funds kind of get allocated into CVAG?
We do $360,000,
correct? So the county has a general, has a direct contribution. And yes, it's about, I think it's closer to 340, but yeah, somewhere between 340 and 360. I'm happy to follow up with you with the exact number. And then we also apply for HAP funding and other funding. So when these grants come to the continuum of care, they open that up for call for projects, and then we.
So over the course of a year, how much do you think we get allocated? Do we know?
Well, the county for sure gives us 340, 360.
Yep.
And then our HAP funding has varied. And it'll go over a couple of years, I want to say, between 125 and...
Our most recent award was 116,000 over a year and a half.
So it's about... So we're getting about 400,000, 450, something like that, per year.
A little bit. So I think the general funds is...
Okay. And then obviously we have... All the cities contribute towards this, and that's the predominant funding for CVAG, I think.
That's correct. And that's going to be the discussion on item D.
Yes.
Yes. Right. And it's not enough. As you will see, and as we discussed, not to get ahead of the item, but as you will hear, even with the increased contribution, we knew that was not enough to cover the deficit. When we brought the program in-house, had gone through and made sure our team went through to all cities, reconciled any past payments, which did give the program, was able to create some reserves for this program. But year over year, we've been dipping into them, and we're still running our numbers, but you'll see that in the budget that's coming.
And also add too is that CVAG is really the only regional collaboration of cities that the county actually doesn't allocate them to. We have other collaborations like in Southwest County, and then developing one in the past area as well as kind of semi-central area. But CVAG is really the only regional body that the county does a direct allocation.
And then does the county also contribute directly to some of these, like Palm Springs and Indio, the actual?
So, yeah, the county invested over $15 million in the
natural. No, I understand the construction, but I mean an ongoing operation.
So part of the ongoing operations under the Home Key application that the county was a partner to does go to operations. We also have contracts both with CDRM and Martha's and Jewish Family Services. So we do allocate, again, to...
Out of the $10 million you get, some of that goes into the valley, just not into CVIT.
Correct. It goes straight to the providers to do.
And can we get a breakdown of that?
Oh, I'd be happy to provide.
Can you? Yeah, thank you so much.
Yeah, we'll be happy to circulate that to the members.
End of my questions.
Good question, sir.
I can give you a whole breakdown of what we allocate within the fourth district. Which would
very helpful. Thank you so much.
And then we'll be talking about all those budget things again under D. All right. Any other questions about continuum of care and the federal funding? Because like I said, we're still going to continue more into the conversation in D, so we'll get more into the weeds on how it directly affects CVAG when we start talking about the increase. If no other questions, thank you so much, Mr. Rodriguez. Really appreciate it. Next on the agenda, I have the annual report for the bus pass program.
Hello. Was there the next slide? Clicker. Oh, I have the clicker. I'm sorry. It's been a while, guys. Okay, so we have our bus pass program information from 2025. So as you can see, for the agencies here in the Valley that are providing services to our homeless individuals, we do buy adult one-day passes, senior and youth one-day passes in order to distribute to these agencies for them to give out. Some agencies, of course, serve more than others. So that's where you see the total amount being given out differently depending on the agency. So total, we gave out 8,712. CVAG does buy 30-day adult and senior passes for the CVAG program for the CV Housing First people who are in the crisis stabilization units. And we are in talks with Sunline in order to try to maximize the bus pass program in order to see if we can get more bus passes.
And maybe if I could just provide a little context, this is a longstanding program of CVACs. All of our cities have been contributing $3,000 a year, separate from your Housing First contribution that then goes to the bus passes. This program was started out of an interest in helping distribute passes directly to homeless individuals to connect them to services. We kind of serve as that funnel and distribute that out. It is named in honor of the former Ridgemont Council. We normally have this on information, and it seems in the last 3 years, members have always expressed an interest in getting more detail. So we did put it on for discussion, if that is so the case.
I had a question. What's the reasoning behind giving a one-day pass versus a 31-day pass?
Really, it's just a matter of price. We would only be able to provide so many bus passes to the agencies if we bought the 31-day bus passes. And then we also find, too, that people coming back to you, especially if you need to see them, that it's better to give one-day passes so they can come back to you to get passes. So you actually stay in contact with those that you're working with, because a lot of times they have to go and go to, you know, Social Security or the Department of Social Services and get you paperwork. And so it really helps these agencies for the people that have to come back in order to get more bus passes.
We do 30 days because we know we're going to be working directly with our clients over generally 90 days. Mm-hmm. So in those cases, there's some benefit.
And what's the cost of those passes?
The 31-day adult bus passes are $34. A one-day adult pass is $3. A senior one-day is $1.50. And a youth one day is $2. So it's actually half the cost to buy a senior bus pass over an adult bus pass. So we do encourage our agencies to see how many people they're working with that are senior disabled, so we can try to maximize our bus passes and provide more.
Have you seen that there's a need to increase the amount that we're distributing, or are we at a good amount right now?
No, I have agencies that are constantly asking me for more bus passes. So it would be great if we could increase the amount that we're able to purchase and distribute.
And I have questions kind of in that same thing. So this is the bus passes you buy. Is there some auditing to see, are they actually using them, or are we just buying them and it's a contribution to Sunline and something? Well, I mean, there are hundreds. So I mean,
yeah,
an agency may use some, and at the end of, I don't know if they expire at some point, just have a drawer full of them and, you know, say, because
it happens.
Some do that, yeah. And they will tend to say, oh, yeah, no, I got, you know, 300 last year, I need 300 this year, and they may still have a drawer full of them.
So that may have
bus passes do not expire.
Okay.
And on top of that, there's reporting that has to be done. So for each bus pass, we require some kind of name or unique identifier, plus the city that person is homeless in, as well as their destination of use for the bus pass.
Okay.
So before we provide more bus passes for an agency, we do require the full report and all the bus passes to be logged before we would distribute more.
All right.
And just a quick comment, since I'm on Sunline board, I'll follow up on that as well too, to see how we handle it internally.
We have been talking with Mona,
yeah,
directly on this. This is the reporting and the data tracking is an area particular where Sunline might be able to help us make that more efficient to make sure we're maximizing that. You know, Tom had some initial conversations, and we've just begun that conversation. But we expect over this year, we expect that.
Are we the only agency that gives out bus passes to homeless people?
I do believe there are some agencies in the desert who, through their funding, have some funds to purchase bus passes. But we are the only agency that has this kind of bus pass program. And not all agencies have the funding to purchase bus passes.
Sorry, I just wanted to make a comment because we're listed up there and I'm also ex officio. We get about 20 bus passes. There's been a big reduction in the number of, sorry.
I
apologize. A shelter from the storm, we do receive the bus passes. We get about 20 on average. Over the last couple of years, we've seen a major reduction in distributing them. We've gotten a lot of virtual services. So that really does help our clients a lot because they don't have to necessarily use the day passes to come in for services. And when they do have an appointment, we would try to provide them either with a taxi voucher or a ride from one of our staff to get them to and from for safety reasons. Mm-hmm. So it gives us more time to prepare if we know ahead of time virtually that they have an appointment coming up at the end of the month. We can coordinate that, but we do need the bus passes and we do use them. We just aren't using them as often, but there is a need. Mm-hmm. And the thing that has helped us a lot with that, because we don't get any other funding for transportation in that sense, is our virtual services. They really do make a difference. So that has been a plus. So I just wanted to share that really quickly. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions on the bus pass program? I see none. All right, thank you so much. Received and filed the reports. Next up, we have California's Encampment Resolution Funding.
I'm gonna grab the clicker, so here's
click your life away.
Clicking away. All right, the two items to present to you today, both on the theme of funding. The first one is a partnership that we have identified with the county related to California's Encampment Resolution Funding, or ERF. The state provides funding in cycles. It's a competitive grant process that focuses on safety and wellness and essentially addressing encampments. This is done, I think we're in the fifth cycle now that is coming up. And the county and city, continuums of care and cities can apply for this funding. CVAG could not apply directly. The county has identified a number of encampments across the county and has been very successful. I don't want to jinx anything here, but has been very successful in securing this ERF funding for the region. They've gotten three awards, including $12 million for the San Jacinto River. The city of Palm Springs also received ERF funding in one of the cycles. And the county staff has recently come to us about an interest in the next round of funding and seeking funding for the fourth district. They came to CVAG and asked us about a partnership with our Housing First program. We threw on our other hat and we said, what about the Coachella Valley Conservation Commission? We're a large landowner, we have a lot of open desert, and that open desert is great for habitat, and it's also prime opportunities for encampments to develop. Welcome, Chair, for the audio record, City of Indio's here. CVCC, for those of you who may have followed, has also been addressing encampments. They recently received a $500,000 grant through CalRecycle to address encampments, and it is just the start of some of the needs across conservation land. The item before you is to seek authorization for CVAG to partner with CVCC and the county on a possible application. We're coming to you early. We're still finalizing what this application would be shaped as, but it's a rolling application period over the next 2 months. And due to the meeting schedule, we do want to make sure we get authorization to apply. The idea would be that we could seek a significant amount of money to clean up encampments on open desert, and then use some of the other resources, whether it's some of the partnerships that CVC has or some of its conservation partners and its Housing First program, to bring in additional resources and essentially take a multi-pronged approach to cleaning up encampments in the region. With that, the authorization would be to authorize our executive director to take any necessary steps to partner with the county, who would be the lead on the application, on an application, and hopefully bring home some funding. I'd be happy to address any questions or defer to Greg.
Just add a couple of things. So the county started, the first one was the Santa Ana River Bottom, which was a significant allocation. We learned during the process of going through the outreach and placement and cleanup, a lot of lessons around that. So then when we went out for the San Jacinto River Bottom, we crafted the application so that it wasn't just the river bottom itself, that you could actually expand out to areas within close proximity to that. So we also included the city of Hemet and then the Saboba tribal lands as well, because when you clean a river bottom, which we found out in Santa Ana River, is that they just go to other places. And so then that allowed us to continue that type of process. We did the same thing for the Murrieta Creek Trail, and that incorporates the cities of Temecula, Murrieta, Wildomar, and Menifee. So again, a really big apple. So we'll do the same thing in this type of application where we'll define basically the conservation areas, but there will be some ability to actually, hopefully, and we'll see how we craft the application, especially some of the encampments that abut some of those conservation areas, specifically in the areas of desert hot springs in Corporate. But to Erica's point, we've been very, very successful. We've gotten a lot of kudos from Housing and Community Development, HCD, from the state and even the governor's office on how we implemented these funds. So we're confident if we craft the same type of application, we will be successful. And we really, the county really, since we've done these pretty much in every other super residual district, we really wanted to make sure that we were going the next round for the fourth district.
Would you care to explain a little bit further on what it means to clean up a riverbed and then have them, your learning was they'd go to other places. So then what was the learning beyond that so that I'm assuming they wouldn't go to other places?
Yeah, so and what we do too, and this has developed into a much more robust program than when we first started in the Santa Ana River Bottom. It's a multi-pronged approach. We use multiple disciplinary teams, excuse me. So we're involving not only Housing and Workforce Solutions, but some of the providers that we use in the area. So we would probably use CVRM, CVAG, Martha's in this area, as well, Jewish Family Services, Department of Public Social Services. We've actually partnered too with animal control due to a lot of them having pets. And primarily starting with a lot of outreach and building, we've actually implemented now to an organization called Healthcare in Action, so for the street medicine aspect of it too, which has proven to be one of the most effective type of outreach tools that there are. And so again, it's building those relationships, getting them into at least either shelter, substance use, mental health treatment, some transitional housing, and then with the goal into permanent housing. So in all three that we're operating right now, our success rate is well over 65% in getting people into permanent housing. And in all three too, as we've if not doubled, in some case tripled. And when we do the application, we have to say the number of individuals that we're trying to help. We've either doubled or tripled that number in all three instances as well. So it's a really effective team. Our department, we assign a project coordinator to each project, and so that there is someone personally responsible at the county.
And so, I mean, rough numbers, let's just say, for the sake of conversation, there's 100 people in the riverbed. You're impacting your 65 of those people, right? And then the other 35, do they stay in the riverbed?
No, because
they're removed.
Yeah.
And where do they go?
Wherever they go.
So you haven't tracked them or whatever. They're not on the streets. They're just.
Yeah, this is, I mean, it's like any other homeless activity that you would do, you're not going to have the 100% success.
I understand. Yeah. Just curious if you have data. Thank you.
I have Carl first and then Anita.
Well, I'm still regurgitating your question. So, and the answer. I know as a volunteer that delivers lunch bags to homeless people, and we know where the encampments are, we deliver the lunch bags there. The when their encampments are cleaned out, some of the people have solar powered cell phones and they call us and tell us where their new place is. They're just moving, and it's 100% of them that move. So just
we did try to partner with Desert Hot Springs, the county did, to for one of the encamp resolutions, and they had chosen to take another path in the delivery of services, so not Jan. So.
Well, and Greg, are those people or individuals cited so they're for trespassing or anything, so they don't return to those places? Because
yes.
It seems like in another year it gets full again.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so if the lands are designated, there's no trespassing zones, yes. But it depends on the area too, because we try and give the work at least a 2 to 4 week period, because it's you have to get the engagement, you have to get the outcome. So I mean, I'm not gonna lie, some of them do return.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, that then becomes the local code enforcement law.
We'll be bringing this item to our CVCC. When we did our last encampment claim, we also looked at, particularly for conservation lands, things like fencing, you know, and other opportunities to make sure the lands also stay clean. Because our last grant with CVCC, for example, was a Cal Recycle grant, so it was a little bit different focus. This is very much a people focus. But when we did do our last CVCC cleanup, we did do quite a bit of encampment work. Spent weeks making connections, connecting folks with resources. But there are other ways, and that is the reason we see this as a prime opportunity kind of partnership, because it's not going to just be the county being able to, you know, bring in a solution, but perhaps partnered with other agencies, including CVCC and CVAG, we can all kind of come at it from our different angles and help address some of the concerns that are being raised about returning to the site or, you know, just moving along to a different location. And
And also, you know, if you divide 180 into 12 million, I mean, it's about 66,000 a person. So a lot of that money is going for cleanup and other things, not necessarily housing or anything else, correct?
For this funding?
Yes.
This is very, well, there. Keep in mind, this would be a grant. It's going to take resources, right, to conduct 2 to 4 weeks of outreach and all that stuff. So, so there's certainly some of that built in.
And so the state doesn't allow us to pay for the actual cleanup. So what we've done in the other projects have worked with flood, with parks, in the Santa Ana River, but I'm going to forget the federal agency, but Fish and Wildlife, sorry, because they have funding to do cleanup. I forget the name of the company, Erica, that you, the conservation, that you got the grant from to do the cleanup.
Power Recycle.
Yeah, so it's looking for partners to do that. We have lobbied the state that part of the thing with this encampment is to clean it up, but that's not. So the to Erica's point, the vast majority of the money is outreach, it's temporary placement, rental assistance to get people into permanent housing.
And in this case, we've been very successful with our Cal Recycle grant that we received. So successful that Cal Recycle has come to us and say, we might have some extra money. Do you have more land? And we said yes. And so we're in those conversations too. So we're looking at this. I recognize this is a little, we're kind of coming at you early in the process versus here's our application. We're ready to hit submit. But this is kind of the partnership that we're seeing form over the next couple of months that we think we can come at, provide the state with a really enticing application to continue the county's streak.
I could add one more thing too, is that as most of you know, is, you know, the county's invested a significant amount of money over the last 3 to 4 years. That was all one-time money, you know, through ARPA, CARES Act,
yeah.
The Emergency Solution Grant funding for COVID. So the purpose of this is, like, we're still trying to make sure that we're bringing in as much resources as we can that are available. And this is really one of the last resources that the state has for us to be able to do different types of services.
I think it's a great idea. You know, I just came from the vendor fair in Palm Springs, and one of the words that I used when I spoke was collaboration.
Mm-hmm.
And this is one of those subjects where it's not a one perspective approach. It's going to take a lot of us from a lot of different sectors to come together to continue to provide services. And Greg brought up a great point. A lot of the monies that were used before were one time. So we always have to continue to find those sources of revenue to continue to provide wraparound services for a lot of folks. And when it comes to encampment, that brings on another topic of location and cleanup and how do we help them secure their possessions? Because although some folks may be unsheltered, those are their possessions. Mm-hmm. They may not be a shelter, but they're, you know, where they're located at, that's their home. So we have to also work with them as well. So it's a multi-angle approach. And so we'll go from there and entertain a motion on this.
Mr. Chair, one more question. The staff report mentions finding or using leveraging existing resources. So I presume that means that there's no intent to ask individual member cities to contribute more for matches that we may have to come up with for funding.
We want to.
There's no intent.
So basically the framing of the decision is we're giving the executive director the option to find the money with no direct impact to the cities.
Yeah, we would be using our, we obviously have Housing First resources. I mean, we need to talk about how we shift maybe some staff time, for example, around in order to help support. And certainly if there was any budgetary impact, then we needed to come back on our Housing First program. But the contribution question is going to be item D.
I'll move approval.
Motion from Condesa. Second. And a second from the Keith. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any nays? Extensions? Motion passed. So we'll continue on this agenda to item D, which is annual contributions to the CV House program in Boston.
Nathan, can you click on the PowerPoint? First, let me clarify the question that Mayor Taylor, I knew it was in one of my staff reports. I just had to read further. The county's contribution is $359,711. And we are in conversations about how to address that in the coming fiscal year as well. Sorry about that.
To match that a little bit.
Okay, let's talk about the annual contributions to the CV Housing First program. As you know, we're running a lean and mean budget in order to make the Housing First program effective, and it has been effective in your consent calendar. You did adopt the latest quarterly reports. We had a really strong first start of the year. This we've already housed an individual for this quarter, and we're got a number of individuals that we're moving along. So we're very proud of this program. It is effective in keeping the chronically homeless in permanent housing. As you may remember, I came to you and the executive committee a little over almost 2 years ago now to talk about the contribution, which at that point had remained unchanged for 16 years. At the time, it was $100,000. This prompted a lot of conversation because the cost had gone up and we were not keeping up with costs with the contributions, and we were having to dip into reserves, and staff was looking for some direction. At the time, we were hoping to balance a budget, didn't quite get there. We are looking for more grants, as just mentioned. And you all supported an increase in the contribution to $125,000 for this fiscal year. It was a recommendation that the executive committee ultimately adopted. At the same time, we were directed to include essentially cost of living increase to look at it on an annual basis here at this committee level. So as detailed in the staff report, we do use a consumer price index, the Riverside, San Bernardino, Ontario area consumer price index. This is the one that is used when we look at membership dues every year. We also look at it for our TUNC program, transportation uniform mitigation fee. CVCC looks at it for the LDMF fees. We look at it in different time frames. The action that you all took was to match the percentage that is looked at for membership dues. And in looking at the year-over-year time period between January and January, the increase would be 3.2%. Staff is recommending that you adopt that increase for the upcoming year. That would be baked into the MOUs that exist with cities. I did include a rundown of where we stand with memorandums of understandings in it with our member cities. At this point, I would note that we said that we were actively working to finalize the agreement in Rancho Mirage. That actually just got signed, I think, earlier this week. So that one is done. We're still in discussions with the city of Coachella, and the city of Desert Hot Springs has shifted their funding to a different provider. With that, I'd ask for the support of the increase, which would put the increase for the coming year to $129,000.
Any
you have any questions for that?
I would just say we are one of the cities that supported this approach because waiting a number of years and then having a 25% increase is,
yes,
you know, is not great. So although this stings a little bit every year, I think it's just the preferred way to do that.
And also, as we continue to move on, I appreciate that Mr. Kirk has brought staff over to our council to explain some of these programs and give updates. So updates are always good to come to the cities. And so when we do go back and ask our colleagues for these increases, they understand the services and where these dollars are actually going. Not only our colleagues, the community as well. So if there's no other further questions,
I have one. In terms of the budget, you say we're drawing down on reserves.
Yes.
So I presume that the expense is growing high faster than the 3.2 inflation factor here by how much?
We're still finalizing our numbers. I think this year we were anticipating dipping into reserves by about $350,000. That left us with a balance of about 1.8 or 1.9. My cheat sheet's over there. I can go look at it.
Okay, that's fine. No, I was just curious.
For the coming fiscal year, and we're still finalizing the budget, but for the coming fiscal year, we've not increased staff. Like, we're not at the level of staff that we're running this program on. It's remained consistent. The number of units, we've generally remained consistent. Sometimes we have to temporarily pick up a unit and not, but we've been very prudent about how the numbers are. But yes, rents are going up. That's been a factor for us. And that there are just general costs. This is a labor intensive program. It's been very successful, but it does take a lot of it. It's an intense program. And
I would just add too that we're hearing from providers as well across the county of the results of inflation, especially around energy costs, housing, and now gas. A lot of this outreach, you know, is mobile. And so, you know, hopefully that's temporary thing, but there are those inflationary pressures. And that's been a common theme over the last couple of fiscal years.
And we won't just rely on increased contributions. We're actively looking, whether it's the state grant or the HAP grant, right, that Greg mentioned. These are all opportunities that we've looked at. That's how we were able to launch, for example, the mobile access center. We didn't launch that until we had a grant to fund that program. So we'll continue to look for those opportunities. This has been an ongoing conversation at our, not only you all, but it's certainly a staff. This is certainly that we're very mindful running a deficit in a program like this is not.
I think my curiosity was how much run time do we have? And it sounds like we have run time to find those solutions, right?
We have a little bit of run time, yes.
I also think, for example, Indian Wells, I believe, committed to a multi-year
yes
program, right? And so I think it at a higher number than this, or at the requested 120.
It was at 125, but we will always take a higher number.
So, but I guess one of the challenges would be if we committed now to multi-year,
yes,
at a number that you asked for, right? And dipping back in is a challenge because we, you know, plan multi-year budgets. So, and, you know, I just think it is my experience with this overall organization that, you know, we'll plan to build, let's say, CV Link, but then we don't build into the budget operational, you know, cleanup or maintenance charges, et cetera. And there's always kind of chipping away at additional costs that weren't necessarily forecast from the beginning. We've done this for a long time. So we knew costs were going up 3 or 4 months ago when you appeared in front of our council. We knew what was happening. So I find this the management of the budget process and the ask process a little concerning. I'm not sure if Indian Wells is going to be prepared to agree to this because, again, we've committed to 3 years, which is great.
So
don't get me wrong.
Let me address a couple of those things. First of all, the MOU that the city adopted and that many of your cities have adopted does include the clause of the increase. So cities were aware of that. And I know a number of cities actually projected out, I want to say it's about three, I think in initial staff reports, they were estimating about 3.5. So those numbers were presented to councils when the multi-year MOUs were adopted. Some cities are on a one-year MOU, and we'll have those conversations with those cities about how costs have gone up. I won't speak to CV Link here, though I'm happy to do so. When you talk about long-term costs, this is something we flagged for several years on this committee and others about, hey, this won't be sustainable. We're going to look for direction. And you may recall that when we came to you for $125,000, we noted that if we had this, when my predecessors had asked originally for the number back 16 years ago, the contribution would be at like 147. Frankly, I stood at the podium for probably over an hour the night that this was adopted just to get the $25,000, let alone an additional $50,000. We know that cities have grown used to $100,000. Adjusting to 125 was a sticker shock, and that was one that we had to manage. And we acknowledged at the time it will not solve the deficit problem. So I can appreciate the points. I'd be happy to come to committees and to all your councils and ask for twice as much. I don't think I'm going to get as far as we've gotten to just ask for 25. But if there's that political will here and you all tell me that, hey, take a stab at it, we'll be certain, you know, we'll be happy to do so. Well, but yeah, long term, we definitely going to have to find a way to increase our revenue.
So what does a vote here mean today? What is a vote in favor of this increase?
So they're proposing just to adopt the increase that was already stipulated in the MOU.
Assuming that the MOUs were signed that way, I don't have the MOU in front of me. But
yes.
But it was part of the MOU.
But let's
one of the cities that had thought this was a better idea to at least put a CPI increase in than waiting a number of years and then running all the revenue that you have saved up down and then coming and say, well, now we need.
All right. So a vote would mean that to the extent that our agreements with CVAG have a annual increase in them, that yes. We are blessing the annual increase to be applied. Is that a fair way of describing it?
Yes.
Okay. Got it. Thank you for the clarity.
It's also quantifying what the increase is.
Fair enough. As opposed to just some random number. Exactly. An API index.
And that's what we were really doing.
Thank you.
Typically, this would be a consent calendar item. I think Erica put it on here to make a very clear point that we are running a deficit regardless of whether it's 3.2% or 13%.
Thank you for the clarity.
Mr. Chair, did you make a motion?
I made a motion.
Yes. Second, motion from Cathedral City, second from the Quinta. In favor, say aye.
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 Any nays? Abstentions? Item does pass. And so the next item is, and thank you, Erica. Thank you for the information. And then next item is information. It's attendance record, and we have updates from ex officio members. Do we have any updates? Yes.
Thank you again, Council. I truly appreciate it. Again, Angelina Coe with Shelter from the Storms. I never, ever pass up an opportunity to speak on behalf of my agency and survivors. The only update I really have is, well, two. One, we're here and we're moving forward. We are kind of, sort of out of our deficit for the year. We've got some additional funding and grants that have been a blessing to us. So we're really grateful for that. Hopefully that continues so that we don't end the year in a deficit, but we'll see what happens. The other update is April is Sexual Assault Awareness Month. And so we are partnering with Peace Over Violence, which is based in LA County. They are doing their Denim Day, which is April 29th. It's the last Wednesday of the month. So we're encouraging everyone to wear their denim on that day to work if possible. The color for sexual violence awareness is teal, hence why I'm not wearing purple today. So we will be wearing teal, denim, and purple, because purple is the color for domestic violence. So if you would join us in doing so, that would be great. If you go to our socials and post pictures or even a comment about standing with survivors, we'd appreciate it. We are standing with our survivors because most of our sexual assault survivors also experience domestic violence. So we feel it's important for us to do it in tandem, especially with the cuts in funding that have happened this year to sexual assault services, forensic testing, and services to children that are experiencing child abuse and sexual assault. So those are my updates. Not to end on a sad note, but please wear your teal, please wear your denim, and Shelter from the Storm is still here. We're moving forward. We're helping clients flourish, and our funding has been pretty stable and stellar. So thank you to the cities that support us, and thank you to our funders and the people in the community that really come and stand with us as survivors of domestic violence. So thank you so much.
Do we have any other comments from ex officio members?
But I did want to acknowledge our partners from probation are here today. And I know there are many of our jurisdictions, so I did want to just acknowledge their partnership.
And on that note, I'd like staff to connect with probation. Probation provides a lot of services that I think sometimes that we don't understand. Your probation, you think they do one thing. I've been able to go out and talk to them a lot in Chief Ride. And so I'd love for them to visit us again and
make a presentation.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Nice presentation. And also, reach out to Amanda Galindo over at CBRN. I know that they have a group of nonprofits who collaborate, there's the word again, and talk about some of the challenges that we have in our community. And when we say ex officio members, I love for them to even come, or if they send a representative to talk about the challenges, because we're here on the dais, but one of the folks out there doing the groundwork. And we love to get a report from them as well. So, and I love for CBRN to join us again for another presentation as well. So we can know what some of our folks are doing when we're funding these programs. We know we're doing one. So I appreciate that. We'll move on to item number 7, which is public comment, non-agenda items. Do you have any public comments?
We don't have anybody online. Anybody in the audience? Public comments.
Thank you. And so our next item is item 8. Is announcements, and our next meeting is Wednesday, May 20th, and I will be here at 10 a.m. as well, and I promise I will be here on time. Today I have to be at 5 different places at the same time, so hey. And so our next executive meeting is April 27th at 4 p.m. here at Coachella Valley Water District Building. Thank you to the Coachella Valley Water District for hosting us. If there's no other comments, this meeting is adjourned.